everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with Tom Fairbanks, Tom engineering and producing the show. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. Wednesday, the 16th of August, 2023. In January, we begin the 14th year of the radio program in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio on 1030 KVOI, Tucson's trusted source for news and talk. The live line for our telephone interview is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. A lot of you following what's going on in my life. I've been pretty transparent about it on Facebook. Man, so many of you. I can't believe the prayers that have gone out for my wife, Anne. And as I posted most recently, the most amazing thing is Anne still looks incredibly beautiful, even though she's resting comfortably and time may be short. But I will say she is looking great. She's sharp. The doctors and paramedics have said 99% of the people who had the kind of massive stroke that Anne had, with blood clots in the brain and lungs, never even make it to the hospital. Well, Anne's talking. She's sharp. She's not in any pain. It's just, I'm telling you, that is just really been a wonderful thing in that regard. And what also has been just so wonderful is all of the support. And as I wrote on Facebook today, the courage of this woman. If I have half the courage that Anne has when I am facing perhaps my final hours, and hey, let's face it, everybody, this is something that we all share. Gabriel Trujillo is with me in studio as I'm going on about this, TUSD superintendent. Let's face it, Dr. Trujillo, it's a fate awaiting us all.
Absolutely, Bill. And, you know, first and foremost, as a newly married person, I can only hope that my wife and I come close to the 51 years
of marriage. What a wonderful storybook ride we've had, traveled the world. We've known each other 55 years. Yeah, we kind of went off and on for 5 years, which was a good thing. Maybe had a little disagreements, but when we finally married, very few disagreements, always seemed to be on the same page. We've been so blessed.
It's been a blessed life for you, Bill, and my heart, my best wishes, my prayers are with Anne right now. I think that if I was in the same situation, I could only hope that me or my loved ones could face down this final transition with the peace and courage that your wife is doing. And I see a sense of calm in you knowing that she's displaying that courage and that faith.
Yeah.
And I hope that that brings you peace during this difficult
really
time.
Really given me strength. I mean, I could not work yesterday. And thanks to Ben Bueller Garcia sat in for me. And Ben's just been wonderful about that. He said, look, I'm on call anytime you need me. But I needed to come in today. I do feel stronger. And I needed to come in. And as we talked with Fletcher McCusker on the show on Monday, that broadcasters are a different breed. Tom Fairbanks has spent a career like I have, an eternity in behind microphones, and Tom's over there behind the glass shaking his head. We're a different breed, Tom, and the mic in front of a microphone is it's a comfort zone, isn't it, Tom?
It is, and you have a persona when you're in front of the microphone.
Yes.
That is not the same when you're off mic.
No.
And some people regard that as being a professional broadcaster is all about.
Yeah. But anyway, I am here. I am ready to do what I do. And I do want to talk to Dr. Trujillo about the new school year, which, let's see, starting August 2nd or so, we're about 2 weeks in, right?
Yeah, we are about 2 weeks in. Yeah, we kicked off on August 4th.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is officially like day 9 of the school year. And it's been a great start. We have no complaints. The district right now, it's up a little bit in enrollment. We're up about 400 students as compared to our peak enrollment season last year. It's a good little sign that we're moving a little bit forward. I have to compliment our transportation department. They probably did the best job I've seen in the last 7 years.
Really?
In terms of getting parents information about bus stops, a good 3 or 4 weeks before the opening of school. That's the earliest we've ever been.
Mm-hmm.
We're sitting at about 170 drivers. That's the most we've ever had.
Wow, that recruitment, the recruitment campaign paid off. And even going to the point where TUSD will help the driver get the licensing required.
Absolutely. And then I got to thank our governing board for having the faith in us to raise the hourly rate to $18.32. They're the highest paid bus drivers in Pima County. And the more drivers that you have, it's very academic, the more routes you can offer, the more bus stops that you can place throughout the district, and the closer those bus stops are to where our parents live. So you can accomplish all three things mm-hmm. when you get more drivers. So I think it's been a very, very smooth operation for transportation throughout. I know we're going to talk about this. Mm-hmm. We're going to celebrate some good news about school letter grades that were recently released from the Arizona Department of Education.
For each school in your portfolio?
In our portfolio, yeah. So school letter grades were released, and we celebrate the fact that 76% of all TUSD schools either kept their same letter grade or they increased it, which was very, very good. We now almost have 60% of the district, that's approximately about 58%, that are either A or B rated. That's the highest we've ever been with A or B rated schools. Wow. So we're very, very excited about these returns. But the challenge of actual proficiency, passing the test, because a big part of letter grades is how you improve kids from mm-hmm. year to year, mm-hmm. which doesn't necessarily mean passing the test outright.
The test scores certainly then are a huge priority.
They're a huge priority. And the school letter grade system gives you points for moving students across proficiency levels on the test. So on the new Arizona Academic Skills Assessment math test, if you have a third grade student that last year tested minimally proficient, and then this year as a fourth grader, they test partially proficient, your school gets positive points towards the letter grade because the school moved the student across proficiency levels. However, you don't get the points associated with passing the test because that's proficiency, which is a separate category. So that's something I wanted to explain to the public mm-hmm. because you'll see A and B rated schools in Sunnyside and mm-hmm. TUSD mm-hmm. and Flowing Wells. Mm-hmm. But then you'll say, well, how can they be A or B rated schools when proficiency rates in math are, 35%, 27%, mm-hmm. 18%? And really it's that improvement piece mm-hmm. where you're moving large groups of kids closer to passing the test than you mm-hmm. did the previous year.
So you've got to show improvement, right?
You got to do both. You've got to show improvement, and then you have to have a good proficiency rate. When you look at a school like Fruchtendler, they did a phenomenal job doing both. They got full points in the letter grade system, which is why they're an A, for moving pretty much the entire student body across proficiency levels.
Yeah.
And then also increasing the amount of students on that campus that actually passed the test outright. And so I want to compliment Fruchtendler Elementary for that amazing work. I want to compliment Dodge Traditional Middle School, who did the same thing. And I want to compliment Kelland Elementary, who's our newest A-rated school. They did the same thing. So we've got some really great pockets of excellence in TUSD, but proficiency rates do remain a concern and a priority for our administration.
Think about morale, how that must be when the team sees they've moved up.
It's a tremendous morale booster for the teachers to see their kids increase proficiency levels. But the frustration rate with the teachers is obviously they want them passing the test.
Yeah.
And so that's something we're going to have to continue to work on through extra additional interventions academically throughout our schools.
All right, let's go to our live line presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Our good friend Matt is on the line. Hey, Matt, first of all, my condolences for the loss of your mother recently. I want to make that public. Very sorry about that.
Well, I really appreciate that. Thank you, Bill. And good afternoon to the superintendent, Dr. Trujillo. The last time we talked, first of all, I think you do an an unbelievable job. You've really transformed the role of superintendent in Tucson.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Because it's always been a center point of controversy, and you seem to have ameliorated that position with the multitude of groups, both statewide and locally. So you've done a yeoman's work, and you've definitely created an atmosphere of positivity. But speaking of some things that, you know, you're working on, I'm sure you saw the article from the Arizona Daily Star about maintenance and the backlog on maintenance requests that are outstanding district-wide. I assume that was you guys. Sometimes, you know, it could have been referring to another one, another district. The second thing I was going to ask, if you get a chance, is Superintendent Horn was on the show. Just to cut to the chase, he seems to think the voucher situation will improve, that it won't be the large deficit. From your point of view as superintendent, you know, where the dollars actually count and happen, you know, do you have any thoughts about the situation as it's developing? And obviously we've seen the state headlines. And finally, if you get a chance, just curious, if you had a chance to look at what happened in Kansas, I know it's not applicable, but their transportation fiasco, I think it was, was there a lesson learned for us? And
okay.
That's it. Thank you.
Three-part question.
Well, thank you, Matt. Those are all excellent questions. Number one, you know, in full transparency, we will take on the HVAC and the cooling issues. We have been rocked by cooling issues throughout the district, and we've been very honest and transparent about that, that it's no secret that we have very antiquated facilities. We have very antiquated cooling towers.
We've talked a lot about that.
It's a function of just not having enough state Mm-mm. funding for capital.
That's part of the bond, right?
It is part of the bond. However, it is our responsibility to keep kids and employees cool. We only have 9 HVAC techs in the entire district because of funding issues and not being able to afford more. But what we have done is we've partnered with 3 or 4 industrial contractors that do, you know, large organization HVAC repair. So
try to pick up some of the slack.
They've picked up some of the slack. The second question with regard to Superintendent Horn, I'll give you a real number, not just my opinion. I'm not going to, you know, I know there's speculation out there about how much of this money goes to kids already in private schools. Inside of TUSD, there are 786 students that live inside the Tucson Unified School District attendance boundaries that attend tuition-charging private schools. Of the 786, there's less than 50 that have ever stepped foot in a TUSD school. So
interesting.
These are all kids that have been in charter and private schools for years just collecting the money to cover their tuition that they could already afford.
Yeah.
Okay, so we haven't seen a large migration out of TUSD schools for this
payday.
And then lastly, I think Matt's referring to the fiasco or the disaster that occurred at Jefferson County Public Schools in Kentucky. Wow. So
what was that about? I haven't followed that.
Their transportation failure was so bad, they had to close school for 5 days.
What?
They're basically starting today. And they made 3 critical mistakes. Number one, not investing in GPS for their drivers.
Okay.
After they redrew thousands of routes.
Where was that again? We're going, I've got a school load of kids here. Where are we?
Right. And so you had kids on buses for hours and hours and hours, just lost. You had parents freaking out. You had kids soiling themselves because they're sitting in their seats for hours.
Sure, okay.
Kids not coming home till 10 o'clock at night. The second really disastrous mistake that Jefferson County Public Schools made was on a major route redrawing. They had absolutely no parent input. They didn't convene any community groups to examine the impact of where they were placing stops along major streets and thoroughfares. And so they had major community blowback when the routes were released from homeowners, from residents, from everybody else. And it was a huge mistake. And I think that the fatal blow to Jefferson County was not releasing the routes to the parents until like 48 hours before school starts. So you had kind of a triple whammy that just brought the whole system down. Fortunately, we learned from that a few years ago. We had our own struggles with transportation about two school years ago that stemmed from kind of the same stuff. We had a driver shortage. We had to redraw routes. Thankfully, our mistakes weren't as major or colossal as Jefferson County Public Schools, but we learned of the importance of getting community input before you change where stops are located. Hmm. Whether residents have kids that come to our schools or not, where you put a stop matters. It's their property. They pay their taxes. It's on their street.
Wow.
You need to check in with them. And then you need to let your parents know at least 3 or 4 weeks before the school year starts so they can adjust their schedule. So great question. Yeah, we've been following Jefferson County Public Schools. I've been watching that superintendent. I don't want to be him. I would not want to be him in these moments.
No. Can you imagine all these drivers? Yeah. It used to be when there was a gas station on every corner, you could ask for directions. Oh, could I have a city map? I don't know. Well, that must have been horrible for the kids. Anyway, we'll be right back with Superintendent Gabriel Trujillo on the Buckmaster Show.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. And again, as caller Matt pointed out, we did have Tom Horn with us for our Friday Focus interview. And then coming up Friday, Chris Mays, the Attorney General. And boy, I've got Gabriel Trujillo here from head of TUSD. I'll tell you, Dr. Trujillo, you got Mr. Horn and then you got Chris and the two of them. When it comes to these school issues, there's very little agreement. Something about not only the vouchers they disagree on. What's this dust up about dual language teaching?
Yeah, so basically, Superintendent Horn's issues are a couple. Number one, that the offering of two-way dual language programs or dual language programs in general are basically against the legislation adopted in 2001, Proposition 203, English only in the schools. He believes that it's a violation of that law. Secondly, he believes that the inclusion of English language learners, students who have not yet mastered English in these programs, also violates the English language only legislation of the early 2000s. Obviously, Attorney General Mace has weighed in and has stated that it doesn't, that it's only the State Board of Education that has the authority to create or relax restrictions around existing dual language programs. So in here in TUSD, you know, we do include Spanish dominant students in our dual language programs because they model the verbal fluency for our non-Spanish speaking students that are trying to learn the language. And then it's good for our English language learner students to have access to native English speakers for their English fluency, which largely occurs as they make friendships and they're on the lunch and they're at recess.
Yeah.
And our English-speaking kids, our American-born and native English-speaking kids are modeling the language for our English language learners in social situations. So it's been very good on the issue of access to school facilities and sports programs. Again, TUSD, we're in the crosshairs of Superintendent Horn because we have Governing Board Policy ACD adopted by our Governing Board in 2020, which acknowledges and respects the rights of transgender students to use the facilities that correspond to their gender identity.
Boy, Mr. Horn, you bring that up, he gets really going.
So we're not a popular district with Superintendent Horn at this moment.
And then, of course, I asked him about the live line. His live line, which is basically teachers, students, I guess the public, anyone can call this live line and lodge a complaint. And he's admitted that a very small percentage of the calls are legitimate.
Yeah, and I don't understand why a parent with a complaint would skip over a principal and an assistant superintendent and a superintendent and a governing board, which is usually the chain that you go if your issue isn't resolved. Mm-hmm. And TUSD, 98%, 99% of issues are resolved between the principal and the parent. Why would you go straight to some hotline in Phoenix to solve an issue at your neighborhood school here in Tucson? I don't get it. And I certainly don't understand when we've established, and he's even said, you know, 95% of the calls are prank calls. And so you're going to take a small number of individuals that are calling up and you're going to start painting the entirety of the Arizona public school system with the same brush based off of five anecdotal complaints around some of these areas. So I don't get it, but again, we don't like being in the crosshairs of the superintendent for state public instruction or the attorney general, and that's kind of like where public schools are now, with public schools in the middle.
Yeah. So has your legal team put together what's necessary to get the bond program on the ballot before the voters? I'm sure there's certain legal hoops that must be jumped into and—
We're good to go, Bill. You know, we've met all the deadlines already set by, you know, the Pima County Recorder's Office. We've got our ballot language is all set. The deadline for pro-con statements for the voter information pamphlet has since come and gone. So we're in a very, very good spot in terms of ballot language and where we're going to be on the ballot. So it's in the hands of the voters.
What do you think it will say simply on the ballot?
Well, the ballot language is going to communicate the need of these dollars for facilities, and it's going to outline our areas of expenditure, our commitment to safe and secure schools, to the renovations of classrooms and instructional spaces, and then, of course, the immediate repair of heating and cooling systems and electrical issues and plumbing issues and roofing issues throughout the district.
Well, it doesn't help, and we kind of touched on this the last time, that we start school here at the worst possible time with the heat. And this is a traditional thing that goes back many years, school starting in August.
Yeah.
Because I mean, where I grew up in the Midwest, it was always after Labor Day.
Yeah. I mean, I could be here all day talking to you about the savings in utilities and fuel and food.
There must be a huge savings.
Yes, if we started after Labor Day and we even ended at the same time in May.
Yeah.
I mean, you cut out 30 days. I mean, we'll save millions that we can pump into other areas.
But we've only got a few seconds. How would you even begin? How would that transition? The board would have to approve that, or would there be state requirements to change the start date?
It's the state requirements that have us starting so early. They put a finite number of minutes that need to be met for kids to get credit at the high school level. There's a minimum number of instructional minutes required for elementary schools to get funding.
Okay. It'd be a lot.
It's a lot. You have to go to the state board. But I wish they could be on the ground and feel what it's like to be sitting in a classroom August 4th.
I can't imagine. All right, Dr. Trujillo, thank you very much. We'll look for your next visit in September. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, we'll take a break right here, and it's the Buckmaster Show midweek edition. Be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade. Using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show midweek edition. We love green things. Who wouldn't? 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. I haven't had a lot of time to actually think about the garden, as all of you know, of my other issues that are going on in my life. But I'll tell you, there's some need of some replacements after the 2 1-in-100-year storms that hit our neighborhood. And I'll tell you, it was the hail that really knocked out some of the plants. So they're looking a little bit worse for wear, but eventually I'll get over to Green Things. 13-acre site, everything you need for the garden, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Bill Doley is with us. Dr. Doley, president and CEO of one of my favorite organizations, a nonprofit, Archaeology Southwest. And before we get to Bill, I do want to say that our live line for our telephone interviews is presented by Rincon Ventures, real estate and property management. But Bill will not be on the live line because I twisted his arm. I said, Bill, it's so much better when we get you in studio. And that's, you were kind enough to come in. How you doing?
Very good, Bill. It's good to be here in the studio. I like to look across and see your eyes and talk directly to you.
People talk about, hey, it's Tucson's birthday. And so the city, we're talking about kind of this gets a little confusing because if you start thinking about like the real birthday of Tucson, it goes back a lot further than what, 1776?
Right.
Yeah, because what, August 20 is 1776?
Actually, 1775.
Oh,
is
gotcha.
The,
75.
There's that extra year
okay.
there. But
all right.
No, it was the, I call it a somewhat artificial, you know, picking a point in time. It's when, that's when Hugo O'Connor, pronouncing it his name in Spanish, he was Irish, but...
Oh, is this the red-headed Irish guy?
He is.
Hugo O'Connor?
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Or Hugo O'Connor.
Who was working as, and this was quite common, I guess, for Irish. A lot of people left Ireland, still do, but he was like working for the Spanish.
Right. And he was sent out to assess ideal places for moving the line of Spanish presidios farther north. And it was his journal entry about his visit to the mm-hmm. Santa Cruz along the area near the base of A Mountain, Tumamoc Hill, was that August 20th of 1775. So we've gone back and said, well, okay, that's when... he enters, you know, one level of entering history. And Father Kino used the term Tucson. A lot earlier.
So what did he like about what he saw here?
Well, there was good water.
A river that was running?
The Santa Cruz River. The water, the underground flow of the Santa Cruz gets forced up to the surface because of the way what we now call A Mountain, extends below the ground surface. So that's always been a very oasis-type setting out there. There's the high, it's why A Mountain in the past was called Sentinel Peak. So it was there's a place to view. There's flat lands off to the south, and there's both a large indigenous population living down at Sonnevier. So it was an ideal location.
The local people, were they welcoming? We had Apaches, right?
Yeah. I mean, the presidios were set up, the first presidio was down in Tubac, and established in 1752 after an autumn revolt. And I use the term autumn to broadly refer to the folks who were, we talk about the Tana Autumn, the desert people.
Kind of the First Nation people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Autumn is the language that was spoken all across this region, all the way up to the Gila River. So the Autumn people are a broad general term that I'll use throughout today.
So let's go a lot further back. What are we talking about? This area, people have been living in this area for thousands of years.
Yes, probably on the order of between 13 and 15,000 years. So there's
15 and
the archaeological record isn't strong here in Tucson. There's a few isolated. We've talked in the past about Clovis points, the big game hunters.
Yeah,
they're better documented down near the border, over near Naco, and so people were hunting now extinct big game back in that era. And, you know, that didn't, there was a big climate change after that. And we see coming out of that, there's a really interesting comment that someone made to me once that, you know, we think of the saguaro as being this emblematic
yes.
you know, symbol of this, of yeah. our region here. Mm-hmm. Well, people were actually here in the Tucson area before the saguaro. There was a different environment.
The saguaro is emblematic of our area, but you're saying the people were living here that didn't see saguaros?
Not unless they went farther south. The climate was cooler and the vegetation was different back there. But over the, when you get about 8,000 or 9,000 years ago, you stabilize and see the modern vegetation that we're, you know, pretty much used to now. Mesquite,
climate, saguaros. So they were talking about climate change back
yes.
then, right?
Yes.
So you're saying it was cooler?
Yes.
Oh, that would have been nice.
Would have been nice
there at that time, yeah. So then there was a big change, what, about 4,000 years ago?
That's the one that really, I think, started to transform the way people use this landscape. And it's maize, or what we refer to
corn.
Now corn as, mm. as corn, was domesticated down in central Mexico. And it about 4,400 years ago, it went both south and north. But it got to the Tucson area at least by about 4,100 years ago. And people started to actually get more energy back from what they put into planting these corn seeds and letting them mature. And they started to, not too much longer after that, we have evidence of irrigation canals and settlements that became much more, not permanent, but people were at least spending a major portion of their year in these settlements along the river where they could grow maize.
Bill Doley, what would you estimate the when we talk about, you were talking just now about a kind of a semi-permanent type settlement in our area. What would then time frame be for when people were kind of living in a certain area here year round?
So we probably roll forward from that 1300 BC time frame mm. to the first sort of 400 years in the common era. So mm-hmm. 400 or 450 mm-hmm. AD, we're starting mm-hmm. to definitely see pretty permanent villages
in our area
along the river here.
And what's this about ball courts?
Well, we use that 450 to 500 time frame, and the villages with a big plaza in the center and permanent houses to start talking about the Ho'okam archaeological tradition. But about 800, people started putting at the margins of those villages a new feature, a big feature, sometimes as much as 50, 60, even 70 yards long, that we refer to as ball courts. They probably actually did play a ball game in that. And every village that, you know, we have reasonable understanding of at that time seems to rapidly adopt mm. having a ball court as mm. part of their community.
What do you think that ball court was like? You know, there used to be a game during my time in Las Vegas in the 70s, they had something called high lie. Tom, do you remember that high lie? Yeah, high lie. I wonder if it was that kind of a thing where they would have a kind of a some kind of a device to catch the ball and throw it against a wall or something
the
like that.
The figurine depictions show
yes.
people actually striking a ball both with their thighs and hips.
Wow.
And or with their upper arms.
Uh-huh.
So and there's even a illustration of a person kind of on all fours sort of backwards
wow.
hitting the ball with his hip. So it's
wow.
probably not a kickball.
Uh-huh.
And it
But it wasn't. It wasn't a fight to the death or anything like that.
I don't think there's no evidence.
A blood sport
of that, no. that we're aware of. In fact, it was probably something that helped people get along.
Mm-hmm.
People would go and play a game, probably yeah. competitively against the next
village.
Then social,
have a little post-game barbecue.
Probably people might have gambled on the outcome
on
of
the game.
All right,
more with Bill Doley, president and CEO of Archaeology Southwest, a nonprofit organization based in Tucson. And the topic for today is what's with Tucson's birthday? And Tucson's birthday is pretty darn artificial in the fact that people have been living here for, as Bill points out, I think he said 12 to maybe 15,000 years ago. More with Bill right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. It's a nice day over in Silver City, midday temperature, and they are an hour ahead of us in New Mexico, 88 degrees. That's very pleasant. And of course, the mile high elevation, about 5,000 to 6,000 feet, certainly helps. Start planning your trip now by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. They're only about a 3-hour drive east of Tucson, so check it out. Perfect time of year now as we transition into the rainy season into autumn. Beautiful time over in New Mexico. Bill Doley is here, president and CEO of an organization that I support called Archaeology Southwest, a nonprofit organization based in Tucson. And Bill, one of the things that's nice over in Silver City, not only hiking in the Gila, but I don't know, it's about a half hour north of kind of the Silver City proper area, is the Cliff Dwellings National Monument, a monument that was established really over, I think it's about 120 years ago, I think President Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt, established that national monument. And the people that have been living there, they were kind of in the same era as the people from Mesa Verde, the Four Corners area. Many people have visited the national park there at Mesa Verde. That time frame was when?
So that's, that was one of the early national monuments, as you say, that designated by Teddy Roosevelt. And it was probably about the early 1200s. Mm-hmm. And people probably moved into that area from slightly north.
Mm-hmm.
And
coming down maybe from the Four Corners?
Probably not even that far. Oh. Probably just a more local development,
yeah.
But definitely moving down into the Gila Valley and way up there in the upper end of the Gila.
But something happened and they moved out of not only the Four Corners area, but they moved out of the area north of Silver City. Something happened. What was it, do we think?
Well, the movement out of the Four Corners is probably a multiple kinds of things. Probably there was
drought.
An environmental component. Yes,
mm-hmm.
Drought.
Yeah.
And probably some social stress. The sites there look very defensive, and people are storing their foodstuffs in very safe places.
Oh.
And so, and that has a...
I've never heard that, so there might have been like a little war going on.
A lot of those cliff... things that we call them cliff dwellings when we look up in the Bears Ears area are actually as much food storage as living space.
And maybe kind of defensive positions.
Mm-hmm. Definitely very defensive.
Yeah. So that period is, say, 1100 to 1250. But earlier, before we took the break, we're talking about kind of the ball court world in that era. That's fascinating to me about these ball games that were held, then they lasted for hundreds of years.
Well,
not the games themselves, but the whole idea of the ball court, which kind of spread around the area, didn't it?
I think what's fascinating is that the idea was probably brought north from Mexico. Mm-hmm. People from here probably traveled down to the south and then mm-hmm. brought back the idea and adapted it to the local conditions. Mm-hmm. And what's really fascinating is how widely it spread across this, you know, southern Arizona. You get ball courts all the way up to Flagstaff. You get them over to the areas by Wilcox.
Really?
You get them certainly down here in Tucson.
So we had a ball court here in Tucson.
Oh, there's...
We had a ball club here in Tucson.
There's probably 20-some and some that are, you know, no longer, you know, preserved, known in the Tucson area in itself. So, and there's over 250 documented all across this landscape. So
what was going on? I mean, why was this...
Well, I think it's probably there was, to help it spread so fast, I think it was what we refer to as an ideology of inclusion. It was something that brought people together and helped them overlook their kind of local base and say, we are part of something bigger.
Hmm.
And
it
had an economic component to it, and it really revitalized the region. And it thrived for that 300 years or so. And it did seem to go into decline. We don't really understand that. But it's that phenomenon of having an ideology pull people together. People speaking different languages may have been, playing in ball courts in different parts of this region.
And something tells me there was a betting component in all of this. Everybody betting on games likes going on right now. Maybe that's not such a new thing.
It's hard to resist.
Yeah. So let's kind of wrap this up. We've got about 5 minutes and bring it back to kind of the founding, the European kind of founding of August 20th, 1775. And Tom asked a good question during the break on the other side of the glass. He spoke in my ear and he asked about kind of the whole, how military component of all of this history. And that really started, I guess, with that, the Spanish Presidio.
Yeah. The getting this, building of the Presidio underway was kind of a, if there was a local newspaper back in the day, or your investigative reporting, you probably would have had some little scandal stories about how the work wasn't getting done, money was getting spent the wrong way.
Yeah, the money coming from Madrid. Hey, what happened to that money?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it took a long time to actually, you know, get the Presidio constructed. You have the Anza expedition that comes through Tucson and heads off to San Francisco, and
it started in Tupac, the Anza expedition.
And
so they come through the what is now the Tucson area, and they eventually wind up in what is now San Francisco.
Yes. And that was
that must have been an arduous journey.
Yes. And there's some pretty decent journals of that both to and fro on that expedition. But, you know, again, the gentleman left in charge to continue the construction of the Presidio, it was not up and running when the expedition returned. So it was a rocky start. And the archaeology that was done down, I mean, the Rio Nuevo project ended up funding a good deal of archaeology related to the Tucson Presidio. Mm-hmm. And it was very interesting, different parts of the 750-foot exterior walls. Only a few of places are they still present underground in downtown Tucson.
What type of walls were they?
Well, in many cases, they were adobe. Other cases, they were clearly much less, you know, dried and
timber
stacked.
Of
they were
some just, kind?
Well, there, there was a an element of it that was probably just a wooden, and if you go down and visit the reconstruction of the Presidio, it shows one of those kind of wooden stockade examples of how the temporary walls were up for a while. So it's very interesting what has come out of that archaeologically.
You know, I think our takeaway message, Bill Doley, from our show today with you is that it's kind of neat to have this feeling that we really have had people like us, you know, humans who have been living in our area for so many thousands of years.
Yep. Beating the saguaros here is quite an quite an accomplishment.
I have never heard that. I never even dreamed about that thought, but that is really something cool to think about, that when you think about Tucson, you think of saguaros, but there were people living in our area, maybe where I live, there might have been no saguaros, and there might have been people walking around going like, why is the saguaro a symbol of the Tucson Desert? Bill Doley, where can we find out quickly now about your organization?
Well, Archaeology Southwest is easy to find on the internet, just www.archaeologysouthwest.org. And we've got a weekly little digital newsletter you can sign up that has no cost, or you can join and become a member.
Well, even though you may, I hate to say it, retire, I don't think you're going to be like really retired, but we'll continue to have you on as a guest because you're now, even though you're like officially retired, your knowledge base hopefully won't disappear and go into retirement as well. Well, look forward to it.
Probably January when that.
Well, we'll look forward to further visits with you even after January. Okay. Thank you, Bill. It's great to see you. All right, that'll do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of my friend Bill Doley and Tom, engineering and producing the show, I hope everybody has a great day.